time and be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist. Joey B has researched grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Today's show is about my grizzly bear research, but you'll see why I gave it the title Glory versus Guts and Determination. And as the show goes on, I am sure you will understand. So as a botanist and an environmental scientist, I was asked to be part of a team of scientists going into the top of the Rockies to evaluate critical grizzly bear habitat. Prior to my journey, I told my family, my friends, and my colleagues about my upcoming scientific adventure. I was envied by many, and I began to, as we say as athletes, feel the glory. It is, it's like you're just so excited to be there and go do this. I flew from sea level on the East Coast up to Bozeman, Montana, where I met my research team, and there we put our plan together, organized our gear, and we headed off into the backcountry. At this point, it was like game day. You're all revved up. You're excited. Turn me loose on the Rocky Mountains. So, I'm not going to give you a day-to-day recall, but on day one, I want to tell you about some of my problems began. We started at about 8,000 feet, with all my personal gear and research gear in the backpack. That's approximately 60 pounds. And so you know that, it's not a problem at all. If you adjust the straps on your backpack the correct way, and you can go back and listen to my 101 series on hiking the perfect day, and it's a day pack, but I'm talking about it. But when you're adjusting the straps on your large backpacks, your external or internal frames, and you do it the right way, the weight becomes part of your body. So there should not be a problem with that. But go back to my original statement. I flew from sea level, and the very next day I was at 8,000 feet. I was not acclimated. As we began our trek, it felt like my heart was going to pop out of my chest. And I really mean it. It was just like exploding. I always pride myself on being fit, except fitness here was not a factor. It takes 2 to 4 days to acclimate yourself to an area. In my case, there was less O2 per cubic centimeter. Yay, when you're at sea level, there's lots of O2 all around you. The higher up you go, there is less O2. So personally, I know that I slowed down my team until about the end of day two. I was not happy about that, but it's just part of it. I had the same, we'll call it body experience years before I was playing in Mexico City. So I flew from sea level up to Mexico City, which is about 1 mile above sea level. And at the first practice, I had that, I'll call it, heart out of chest experience. And I also, have to take into consideration there, it was over 100 degrees outside there. But it's happened to me in the past. Now it's happening again, and I know what it's about. But you can't control it until you acclimate yourself. Now, I'm going to delve into, the many adversities I faced on the trail. But now, looking back, I would not trade a day of my research project, because it doesn't get any better than if you're seeing a sow. That's a mother bear with her cubs. Some of the things that we would see out there, whether it was, herds of elk, whatever it was, you can't even say day to day, because sometimes it was minute to minute, and you can never trade those memories. Now, I'm sure you know by now, this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. Every day, if I have a speaking engagement, I shower and I'm off to the event. And if I'm working out or I'm headed to the outdoors, which is just about every day, I shower as soon as I get done. Well, we were heading into the Rockies for about 7 days at a clip. It was some of the most beautiful scenery I've ever witnessed, but there was no way to take a shower. The head research scientist told us, hey, we'll get grimy, we'll get sweaty, but absolutely under no circumstances do not go jumping in a stream, because it is glaciated water. This literally was water that's running off a glacier, and it's colder than you could imagine. Well, After 4 days, two male scientists, they stripped down buck naked. They said they couldn't take it anymore, and they ran into the glaciated mountain stream. I am telling you, the screams of pain could probably be heard around the world. Note to self at this point, stay sweaty and dirty. You will get clean another day. Stay out of the glaciated water. Well, I realized that when everyone smells, that really no one smells too. And that was sort of like, I guess, like a little perspective on, you know, what was happening there. Well, the first time we came out of the mountains, it was about 7 days, and we paid for a shower at a campground. And I'm going to tell you, it was absolutely the best shower I have ever had. But I would gladly trade my head-scratching, itchy, sweaty self because I was able to stand on a glacier at 13,000 feet. It is a view from the top of the world, literally. So, I mean, there were those trade-offs, and some of these trade-offs were just definitely worthwhile. The saying in Montana is, if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes, it will change. You know, we'd be standing on one mountain ridge, and you would actually see the cumulonimbus clouds rising up over another mountain, and they'd be moving our way. And I'm telling you, as quickly as you could drop your gear, you rip out of your backpack. You know, I might be in a like t-shirt and a pair of shorts. It's in the low 70s. And I am throwing every bit of winter gear that I have on. Because remember, I'd have everything I needed to survive in that pack. And all the winter gear. And in an instant, it would go from 70s to 30s. And it would be snowing. One day, the hail was the size of like your thumbnail. And another day, you just saw these stratus clouds moving in, and it began to rain. And if you've ever experienced like an afternoon rainstorm down in Florida, the rain comes down, the cliches people always say is it comes down in buckets. Well, the storm on us was buckets, but you know, in Florida, it lasts for about 20 minutes. For us, it just rained and rained. And I'm telling you, it almost sounds like a Winnie the Pooh story, and it rained again. It rained for about 30 hours straight, as hard as you could imagine. And you know something? There was a river running under my tent. That's how much water was moving. And it just kept coming and coming. Well, my waterproof tent. After a while, my waterproof tent was not waterproof anymore. And you could actually just feel, you know, you've got your little pad below your sleeping bag and there's water there. And then all of a sudden, your sleeping bag and you're trying to keep it aloft, you know, and try to, well, after a while, it is just soggy and you are sitting there in sog. This was a deluge and there was just no way to sleep for those 30 hours. You know something? You go, well, how could that experience be, you know, something that you would enjoy? Well, let me share this with you. I learned so much on this research trip about how to read the weather. I would not have, like, you know, the knowledge about reading the weather unless I was there and I lived it. Because again, I've been in the outdoors, you know, short-term weather, but, you know, weather that would just change in 5 minutes or things that would be happening where you just have to make a good read at it. Well, you know, years later, we were actually filming a kayak fishing adventure and we were paddling from island to island. And let me tell you, the fishing was absolutely superb. You know, and this is from a fisherman's standpoint. When you're catching fish after fish, there is nothing that could tear you away, or so I thought. So you see, we're there, got a cameraman, we're on these small islands, and we happen to be on a small island with no canopy on it at all, whether it was natural or man-made, so there was nothing there. And out of the corner of my eye, I see this little black speck in the sky. And I say to everyone, okay, pack up the gear and the kayaks, and let's paddle as quick as you can to the mainland. And they're looking at me like, what are you, nuts? And, you know, because at that point in time, the sun was out. And I went, no, we got to go, and we got to go now. And we began to paddle, and they could actually begin to hear the thunder and lightning behind us. And I am telling you, we are paddling as hard as we could to get back to the mainlands. And when we were about maybe 100 yards from shore, the storm finally caught up to us. And I'm going to tell you, I don't get afraid often, right? It's like, I just don't. And there was a clap of thunder probably about 500 feet above my head. And I'm telling you, I was paddling and all of a sudden I must have jumped out of my kayak, stopped paddling and just kept back into the kayak and continued to paddle. That's how nuts the storm was. But you see, I was able to read that storm from all that I had learned out west and made sure that everyone was safe on that, you know, that filming adventure. So, you know, what I learned at the top of the Rocky, I am sure saved us that day. You know, I hope you've had the time to listen to one of my shows titled Don't Look Now, But There's a Snake in My Boots. It is something, you know, and I have these stories about, you know, things, true adventures, you know, with critters and me, you know, in the wild. Well, as you listen to that one, or right now, you'll find out I love snakes, all kinds. I've handled many different species. On this excursion, I have the opportunity to see many rattlesnakes, prairie rattlesnakes, western diamondbacks, and pygmy rattlesnakes. You see, they seek out protection under rocks and brush. When it was time to find Mother Nature, we were told to take a stick, but I already knew this deal from my rafting adventures and all. And the saying we use, rattle the bush, and if the bush rattles back, go somewhere else. Well, I'm going to tell you that many times you'd go walking along with your stick and you'd hear a little sss, and then you knew, by the way, that was me rattling because I do a decent rattlesnake here. I'm in the studio. No, I don't have a loose rattlesnake roaming around. And you would even put your backpack down. And if you put it your backpack down for an extended period, that really became cover. So you might get like a pygmy rattlesnake underneath your pack as well. So you'd actually, before you picked up your backpack, you'd have to take your stick and you'd have to rattle it. So I remember one of the days we were walking over, somewhere in the top of the Rockies there, we're walking over this, it was just loose rock somewhere. Call them from like almost like watermelon size to a little bit larger. And we're hiking over them and you could hear, because this was protection, and there were rattlesnakes inside of all of the rocks. And as you're walking along, you're hearing and then you go somewhere else and you're in. And you know something? I would not trade that day for any other day. It was one of the coolest events in the outdoors I've ever experienced. So you see, much of my research has had me living in log cabins or in the comfort of a home. One of the times I was doing some research for the U.S. government on a 90,000 acre ranch. But the grizzly bear research, you know, was a grueling one. You had to carry all of your gear up and down the Rockies in all weather conditions. It wasn't the up mountain climbs that were the worst, but there were the downhill treks. You see, you had all that weight from your backpack. You know, again, you're making part of your body, but it does, you get this constant pounding on your knees. This was a physically demanding project. But I'll trade sore knees any day for looking at the stars each night. You know, every night, sitting by the fire out there, and you're looking at the night sky. And if you've never seen the western sky, and I'm going to tell you right now, you need to, in your lifetime, get out there, sit underneath the stars, and take a look. The beauty, the spectacle. It's spectacular. I told you I'd use that word a few times because you're looking at, you know, our, so to speak, like our corner of the universe, and it's second to none. You know, I know by now I've shared with you quite a bit of, you know, the guts and determination. Well, now it's time for the glory. So let me give you one of the neater things that had happened. One of the afternoons, it's, you know, late in the afternoon, we're up at about 11,000 feet. We actually had in this little, it was almost a little area that was treed, and we had found a great place to set up camp there. So I go out, and I'm looking over the edge, and as I'm looking down, and I'm sure you all know what a golf course looks like, where you have all these great green patches, and then there's some trees in the middle and little streams and things. Well, I look down, and there's got to be, I'd say, 100 elk. There's a herd, and it's all cows, the mothers, and their calves. And I'm just looking at them, and it's just like this really neat thing. And then all of a sudden, over one of the hills, I see two coyotes come up over the hills. And I am telling you, I witnessed something that, again, if you were to say, like, read this in a book or YouTube, I'm watching this in an instant. The cows pushed all of their calves in behind them. They created this. Now, think about this. You're talking about like 100 elk. And elk, I always say, are like horses on steroids. They're monstrous animals. And the cows pushed all the calves in behind them, and they created this huge circle. And in the huge circle, the cows were all facing out around the circle. So if you were like going to draw a line, and each line represented a cow, and they were facing out, and it was now like a football game, and they were just standing there like a down lineman. And the two coyotes, they would sort of try to stalk their way, even though the cows knew what was going on. They stalked their way closer and closer. And as they got closer, they'd get close enough, and one of the cows would just come charging straight out, and the coyotes would back off. And then the cow would actually put it in reverse and back herself up into that little slot, and there was a protection. And then the coyotes would come back from another angle, and they'd try it again. And I watched probably they tried it like three or four times until they realized that there was no breaking down this defense. And for me to see that, it is, again, let's go back to the cool word. It was spectacular. Now, one night, and not the night of the 30-hour rains and all that, there was a thunder and lightning storm that literally lit up the sky. And I also, so you know, I love storms. And I'm just peering outside my tent, and I actually see lightning hit the top of a tree and obliterate it. I am telling you, it looked like a science fiction film. I couldn't wait till the next morning to go look at it. But before I can get to the morning, I'm looking out again, and a lightning bolt hits in this little piece of a field, and it hits it, and it explodes into, I'll just say, thousands of baby lightning bolts shooting off the ground in every direction. So here I am. I am waiting till the morning. I wake up, and there is that burn mark on the ground from where it hit, and you look at the tree, and the tree is just obliterated. The bottom part of the tree is there. The top part just gone completely. And I also know the saying, if a tree falls in a forest, no one's there. Well, I've heard trees fall in the forest up here in the top of the Rockies. And yes, it makes a big sound. That's another story, but for another day. You know, but I wouldn't trade any day for that one. It was one of the coolest events in the outdoors I've ever experienced. You know, so much of my research has me, you know, just, it's like, You're out there for the experience, and it's the greatest experience, but you're also learning and just loving life, because at that moment, life doesn't get better. And you could also tweet me at Joey B Outdoors. That's J-O-E-Y-B-E Outdoors. You know, if you have a question or a comment, hey, feel free, send me a tweet. Now, how about if I explain to you about how streams began? People are going to go, well, I know a little bit about, well, I'm going to tell you. My exploring, and I would be on the edges of glaciers, and you would see these tiny, and I'm saying as like as thick as, or thin as, like your pinky. And there would be these little tiny streams running off a glacier, and they would meet up with another little tiny stream, and now the stream was twice as large. And then you would just keep following them down, and they meet up with another one, and you would actually begin to see the weathering and the erosion going on along. Now, think about this. It might be as wide as your wrist, but I am looking at what I am calling baby streams, you know, and as an environmental scientist, and I'm seeing, because, you know, I always talk about weathering and erosion. I actually have a great show on weathering, erosion, deposition coming up. And as I'm like talking about like things like this, I'm going like it just doesn't get any better. You know, at nights we'd have campfire showtime. This is where everyone was required to perform. You know, you didn't have to be this great actor, singer. You know, we'd have sing-alongs. Some people would tell jokes. There were games. Some people would tell ghost stories or Native American tales. And this is where many of our lifelong bonds were actually created. Oh, and did I mention to you that on my grizzly bear research, we actually researched grizzly bears? Yes, you know, hey, that was why we were out there. So each day we were tracking, and I call them G-bears. We were tracking G-bears, and we're looking for bear signs. You know, if we're finding tracks and scat, because guess what? Scat does happen. The scratchings and the kills. And I'm going to tell you that, you know, if a side of the mountain was covered in ripe blueberries, a grizzly bear would make a day bed there, and he would stay there and take as long as it took to eat every single blueberries. You see, blueberries, they don't run very fast. And since blueberries don't run fast, you know, omnivores, they prefer to eat easy food. So they're just going to be around and hang out for a long time. You know, an interesting observation we made was, you know, we know that bears love maggots. Don't knock it till you try it. And I can't knock it because I've never tried it. Well, maggots also don't run very fast or crawl, I guess, that way. But we also found out that the bears were eating lots of moths. So there are, you know, different hatches of moths going on, and you could actually watch them eating those. It's pretty neat. You know, as my research was coming to a close, you know, there was always like a minor adventure. You know, one of the times I'm eating a peanut butter and honey sandwich and the honey leaks out from my sandwich and onto my camo pants. Well, you can't ever bring food into your tent. And but if you're listening to this and you're the camper, the day, you know, overnights or backpack, no food ever, no smells of it. We don't even take the clothes that we cook in into our tents because we don't want to have, we don't want our tent to become, and I always call it, you become a burrito because you're the food wrapped inside your sleeping bag. And that is not it. So when I spilled that honey on my pants, I actually had to hang my pants in my food bag. You know, we always talk about 10 feet up, 4 feet out, 4 feet down where you're hanging your food. So, you know, you say, well, what's the big deal about that? Well, when you wake up in the mornings, it's 30 degrees outside. So I am out there in my, I don't call them underwear, I call them my U-wares. I'm out there in my U-wares quickly getting down my food bag so I can get my camo pants on. People are saying, well, so why don't you have another pair? Remember, everything you could possibly carry, so you're carrying a limited amount of equipment because everything is on your back. You know, I knew when the research was completed, I was going to spend a few days fly fishing in Yellowstone. You know, I call Yellowstone my summer playland because I have spent so many summers out there exploring, fishing, just one of my favorite places to be. You know, there were countless photos I took along the research and the memories that will last a lifetime. For sure, this is the glory. Until next time, enjoy life's adventures. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures. Joey B's adventure. Joey B's adventure. Joey B's adventure. Joey B's adventure. That was awesome.